This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
We bring you that feature, of course, between 11 and 12, the Knowledge Bank. And we always motivate and say you can also donate or contribute to the Knowledge Bank by emailing me on lucorna@power987.co.za. And you share some interesting papers, reports, and other material that you would like us to have a read and talk about. Today, we will be focusing on non-financial census of municipalities for the year ended 2019. And I'll be joined by the director responsible for local government institutions at Statistics South Africa, Malibongwe Meme. Good morning and welcome to Power Talk.
Good morning, Lucorna, and good morning to the listeners.
Thank you so much for making the time to join us to dissect this report. Quite interesting and really touches on the key issues of service delivery that are important to each and every citizen, particularly because these are important for environmental health, for hygiene, for the well-being of each and every citizen in our country. Perhaps, Malibongwe, let's start here. When you say non-financial census of municipalities, what do you mean and what sets this report apart from other type of studies that you do in communities, such as the census, such as the household survey? And I know that in the report you have created a caveat as to how this differs to those studies.
Okay, yeah, the non-financial census is a service delivery-based survey, unlike the others, financial census and maybe the capital expenditures by the public sector, where they focus on finances of the municipalities in terms of the revenue generated or collected, as well as grants received from government, as well as how that revenue is being expended to the household and to the municipalities as a whole. Non-financial focuses on the service delivery part of it in terms of who is getting the four basic services, which is mainly your water, or your electricity, your sewage and sanitation, and your refuse removal, which is also called solid waste management. So we focus on that. We focus on those who are getting those services, who are paying for them, and those who are getting those services free of charge in terms of like the free basic services. As you know, the policy was introduced in 2001 by President Thabo Mbeki to say municipalities must give such services to those who cannot afford to pay for them. But each municipality must set its own criteria in terms of who should qualify and who should not qualify. So we also look on the issues of who are the indigent in the municipalities and how are they getting these services. It differs to the census because remember, there are always two sides of the equation, the demand side and the supply side. You mentioned the census, you mentioned the general household survey, you mentioned the community survey. Those ones are on the demand side.
Yeah.
That means they cover the demanders of these services, which is mainly the household. Our enumerators or our field workers, they go to those households and ask, what services do you get from who, for instance, in those demand side? But non-financial census is the supply side of the equation, where we go now to the municipalities to say, who are you providing the services to? So now the non-financial measures the consumer units,
yeah,
which is mainly the connections, because municipalities will say, I've made so much connections in a particular area. Let's say Tshwane, I've connected 300 new or I have constructed 300 new connections in Tshwane in terms of electricity, for instance. But that does not coincide 100% to the households, because under that one connection, for instance, you might have multiple households. So that's the difference between the demand side and the supply side of this equation. That is between your censuses and as well as the non-financial census. But to a certain extent, we do sort of measure, because we cannot have more connections that are more than the households.
Yes. Now, before we move forward, how would you know that the municipality is telling the truth, particularly a rural municipality where people's water is quite, in the community? The reticulation, the reservoir, and the likes are in the community, versus where, there is billing. So it's easy because the system is quite automated and the dashboard of the municipality is able to pick up those consumer units that you talk about. With rural communities that are not necessarily in a particular water reticulation grid that is billed or billable by the municipality, were you able to verify if that water that they account as having been reticulated to communities has in fact and is still there and functioning properly?
Okay. I would say, unfortunately, that is beyond the scope of the survey, the question that you are asking. But we do cover like the rural municipalities, but in those municipalities, we understand that now we have to sort of look at the households, because there are standpipes that are there in those villages where more than 200 households or quite a number of households are getting water from that one standpipe, which would be regarded as one consumer unit by the municipality. But now when it comes to that, when it comes to the levels that are beyond the RDP standards, that is where you get water now at a distance of more than 200 meters from the yard. We know that now it's going to be the household instead of it being the consumer unit. So municipalities do provide at least the estimates of those households who are getting the water from those standpipes. And in terms of the electricity, those that are not on the grid by either the municipality or the Eskom, then they make sure that at least they make alternatives in terms of giving them paraffin, giving them candles, giving them solar systems, because at least maybe the infrastructure is not yet installed in that particular area. So we try to cover that information. But I must mention that this one, non-financial, is difficult. It's unlike the financials, because for the financials, you have your audited financial statements, where now you just have to verify the information using that audited financial statements. But for non-financial, the information is not there. But we try to get the annual reports, which sort of talk about service delivery as well as the IDPs, just to verify the information given to us.
In fact, Malbongo, you do make a note in your limitations of the survey that the data source is municipalities as opposed to households, which alludes to the point that you are talking to. But also, you talk about this billing unit or delivery point rather than households, being the central focus. Can you just help me here with the terms consumer unit or billing unit and why it differs to being comparable, for example, to household-based surveys? I mean, one would imagine that the billing unit is a household, but you also do talk about, multiple households that are reflected under one bill.
Yes, yes, Lukona, like I indicated, the billing unit, for instance, in my house, I have got a meter from the Madibeng municipalities, because I stay in Northwest. I've got a meter from Madibeng municipalities, but that one is equal to one consumer unit, which equates to one household, because I'm one here. But in some areas, you find that at the backyard, there are some sheds there, there are some flats there built by the owner, in order for him or her to have some sort of income in terms of rent. So those ones are also connected. They don't have their own individual connections.
Yeah.
But they will be connected to this one meter that I'm talking about. So if I happen to build in future some houses like or flats here behind my main house, they will not have their own connections, but they will be connected to the one in the main house. So you will have one consumer unit, but multiple households.
Okay.
Because there are people who are staying at the backyard there. So that's why we're saying these two terms. One consumer unit can, a consumer unit cannot be necessarily equal to household.
Yeah.
So it's not a one, it can be one to many in terms of a relationship.
Now, Malebongo, let us look at some of these key findings that you have come up with. Seemingly positive changes all around across the provinces, but in differentiated ways when you begin to look at different provinces, and we'll probably touch on that. On your figure A, for example, you look at the number of consumer units receiving services from municipalities, comparing that with 2018 and 2019. Just take us through the overall picture, some positive changes and most change really around sewage and sanitation.
Yes, yeah, the key findings between 2019 and 2018 financial years, indeed, we saw a lot of increase on the basic sewerage and sanitation. I'm trying to get to the right table.
Yeah.
Yeah, the 7.6. In 2018, there were about 11 million consumer units that were receiving basic sewerage, but that increased to 12.5 in 2019, a 7.6% increase. Yes, the increase mainly sewerage is a broad concept.
Yeah,
we look at the flush toilets that are inside the house that are connected to the main sewerage pipe from the municipality. We look at the septic tanks. We look at the chemical toilets. We look at the ventilated improved pit latrines and stuff like that. And we also look at the bucket toilet systems that are provided by the municipality.
Yeah.
So in most instances, municipalities, they provide these bucket toilets in order to sort of as a temporary measure because there is no sanitation available. For instance, we know that some politicians, I won't mention the names, to be on the safer side. But some politicians, they say if people, they see the vacant land, they can start building their homes there. So now a municipality is forced to provide services to those people who have just bought homes overnight. So, we know that the fiscal, our fiscal at the moment is under enormous stress because the money isn't there.
Mm.
So municipalities would have to provide a sort of temporal measures like the bucket toilets in such particular informal settlements. At a later stage, they would sort of replace those because they are, like I'm saying, they are below the RDP standards. They are unhygienic. They can cause people to get sick. So now at a later stage, municipalities are forced to sort of replace those buckets with at least maybe ventilated, improved pit latrines. But if maybe the structures or the homes or the houses built there, whether they are permanent or temporal, in terms of the structures, if the area is considered a sort of permanent, then they can start now erecting sort of a nice and upgraded sewerage system, which is mainly your flush toilet.
But Malebongwe, I took keen interest to check whether, as you did your study and gotten these responses from various municipalities, did you interrogate in some instances what actually is going on and causing? I hear the point that you are raising insofar as, you know, people occupying land and then these services having to be made. But I just looked at the figures and the Eastern Cape, Northern Cape, Free State seem to be the provinces that grab with this problem of bucket system toilets the most, and I wondered whether is it partly because there may be communities even there that are in farming areas and so on, just the type of a community that experiences this challenge. I mean, if you look at the Northwest, there was an increase from 625 bucket toilets in 2018 to about 3,317 in 2019. That's a massive increase. Did you try and gauge the reasons behind some of these increases and stats?
Yes, yes. Obviously, we would ask the reasons, and we would ask maybe the areas where such increases are at. But we wouldn't go and verify. We would depend on the municipalities. I think it's the duty of the Auditor General now to go and verify if your municipality say I've erected this particular area in my jurisdiction, then it's the duty of the Auditor General. Us as SSA would just know that the reason for the increase maybe in the bucket toilets mainly is in Disobotla. I think it's in Disobotla in Northwest. It's because of the informal settlements. They are providing it as a temporal measure to those informal settlements. That's the reason that they have given to us. But solid waste has increased as well. It's the second largest compared to sewerage and sanitation. Then it's water, and then it's electricity. For electricity, you would know that it's not only dependent on the municipalities. The rural ones, they mainly depend on Eskom. Yep. So like there were no more increases, especially on the rural provinces like your Limpopo, Eastern Cape, and your Northern Cape, because the service is partly done by Eskom, and the service is partly done by the municipalities in those areas. But yeah, we do have reasons for all the increases. Like I'm mentioning the issue of Disobotla, which is in the Lichtenberg area in the Northwest. That's what they gave us to say. No, we provide these buckets as a temporal measure. They are hoping in the near future that it will be replaced with a better sanitation service.
Of course, you also look at the question around free basic services that are available to indigent households. And you also just look at the policies that are in place in the various municipalities. Would you say your findings paint a good picture insofar as coverage of indigent households? Because when I saw the stats in some areas, you start seeing a decrease, a significant decrease of people who were, you know, receiving services at a free basic level, particularly water services and free basic water services. You see a decrease across the years between in some of the provinces, particularly I'm just trying to find the actual province that somewhat worried me. If you look at Gauteng, for example, the decrease in proportion of people benefiting on your table A, does it worry you? And have you gotten some reasons as to why is it that seemingly people who do need these services are now being left behind? Is there something in the policy formulation or articulation or even the manner in which these assessments are done that causes some people to fall in and out of these benefits?
Yeah. You would notice that in our headline, or maybe the article that is on our website, we have indicated that the basic services are increasing, but the free basic services provision is decreasing. The main reason now, when it comes to the free basic services, remember, even though it's free on the receiver's side, but there is someone who is paying for it, which is the municipality. Mm. And I've mentioned that we know that the country as a whole is struggling now in terms of the finances.
I mean, yes, you did talk about this fiscal space challenge, and I'm wondering then, because it articulates the major impact.
Like Table A is talking about everybody who was getting the free basic services. But now municipalities are moving away from giving free basic services to everybody. They are now focusing on those who really deserve to be given the free basic services. That is the poorest of the poor, if we can use that term. So, in the past, the approaches are different. There is a broad-based approach that was mainly used by the municipalities in the past to just give everyone the free basic part, whether you are a teacher, whether you are an accountant, whether you are a doctor, you would get the free basic part. But now municipalities are moving away from giving those people who are not supposed or who are not eligible to benefit from that, the indigent support. They are moving away to giving only now to the indigent. That's why now they are moving away from broad-based, from geographical approaches to a more prominent approach now called self-targeting, which is targeting only the indigents now that are supposed to get. But again, it's not automatic. If you are an indigent, you would get. You must come to the municipality and register. If you are an indigent and you haven't come to the municipality and register, you wouldn't form part of their register. So in fact,
you talk about even the cut-off points that various municipalities use in this report. I mean, I may not always be able to locate in my mind exactly where which table deals with that. But you talk about the cut-off points in terms of income earnings for households.
Yes, yes. Those are the criteria used by the municipalities to say, okay, we will regard everyone who's earning less than 4,000 as an indigent. I'm just giving an example. So if you are earning less than, that is the combined income for the household, not only for maybe the father in the household, but for everybody who's working. Their combined income should be less than 4,000 in order for them to be regarded as indigent. Most municipalities, they are using the two times pension, old age pension criterion. So I think old age pension, if I'm not, it's around 1.7. Mm. So 3.4. If you are earning more than 3.4, you are not regarded as an indigent. But if you are earning less than 3.4, you are regarded as an indigent. And again, if you come in 2019 and register at a particular municipality and you meet the criteria and you are in their indigent register as an indigent household who must benefit from these three basic services, then in the following year, it doesn't mean that automatically you will be in that particular list. And register your status, and update your status so that services can continue. If you don't come, then automatically you are kicked out of the system. But we are just hoping and praying that municipalities do inform the people about these things, because if you don't know, of course you wouldn't come and register.
Malibongwe, please,
you are stopped to get the
please hold that thought, because I do want to come back to this issue of information availability to citizens and residents in those various municipalities. But it is time for Power News headlines.
Power Talk with Lukhona Mguni. Call Lukhona on 0861-987-000.
And of course you can tweet me at Lukhona Mguni, hashtag Power Talk. The time is just 26 minutes to 12. Wow, I was trying to buy myself another hour there, clearly almost saying it's 26 minutes to 11. It feels like it's going quite well and fast. We are bringing you the Knowledge Bank with Malibongwe Meme, director responsible for local government institutions at the Statistics South Africa. And of course, if you have any question as far as the conversation has gone, you can dial in on 0861-987-000. And of course, you can tweet me at Lukhona Mguni. We are talking about the non-financial census of municipalities for the year ended 2019. Malibongwe, I want to move to the area of managerial positions and just the staffing, really, of our municipalities across the country. Perhaps before we go into that, can you just remind us, when we talk about Section 56 managers, who are we talking about and what roles do they perform?
Okay. Yeah. Section 56 managers are those managers who report directly to the municipal manager. That is your CFOs, your directors, because you will have a director, the infrastructure director, a corporate services, according to the structure of each and every municipality. Those are the ones who are reporting directly to the MM, including the chief financial officer of the municipality. That's why in most instances, when the MM is fired, then the CFO is likely to go, because the new MM wants to bring his own men. Yeah.
Now, of course, I'm mostly interested in the vacant posts insofar as that is concerned. We do see a decrease between 2018 and 2019. But when we quantify 309 vacant posts, I mean, it is talking about very highly placed individuals, as you have articulated to me. And it is talking about skills and knowledge and so on that is needed within the municipality. And of course, it means possibly there's somebody who is now acting and whatever other roles they were performing within the institution remain unfilled. Do you sort of try and understand why the vacancy rate, 309 out of 1,540 available posts, that is a bit high?
Yeah, indeed, that rate is high, and I think that's the picture is like that across the government as a whole. What would I say about, or what I would say about the vacancies? Yes. Municipalities sometimes, even though these vacancies are funded, because like these are top level positions, for instance, you must first have the sort of a permanent mayor, a permanent municipal manager, before you can have permanent directors, because we know municipalities is influenced by the politics.
Yeah.
If you concentrate more on the lower level instead of a senior level, then you would still fill the vacancy, but for a short space of time. So once that person maybe goes, then the people reporting to him in most of the instances, especially the CFO, they follow that person. So this rate is high, but some municipalities, they place moratoriums to say, no, the vacancy will be filled after maybe we have done ABC in terms of the senior management and stuff like that. So they place some moratoriums, and at some point they uplift these moratoriums. But I wouldn't say the issue of money here, because we only concentrate on the funded vacant position.
Yeah.
We don't want the unfunded one. We want the funded, which means the money is there, but I think the recruitment process is being delayed. But unfortunately, our survey doesn't go. So this analysis that I've just made is just based on my general knowledge.
But of the space,
Our survey per se doesn't go in detail as to why these vacancies are not filled and stuff like that. I think,
I mean, just talking about that, because you then focus on managerial positions by province, and there are provinces that seem to be worrying. If you look at the Western Cape, an increase on vacant posts from 132 to 199, an increase in vacant posts in Gauteng from 804 to 806. Surely these have implications insofar as service delivery is concerned, and maybe this is why people continuously complaining about the rate of service delivery, because perhaps there are not enough hands on deck to perform these duties. But I do understand you saying your research does not necessarily delve into these issues behind the scenes as to the reasons why we are seeing these increases. Then the person listening at home might say, then why do you do this study? When I read these numbers, what is it meant to tell me?
Yeah, the study, we do it for our key stakeholders, that would be your Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, which is your COCTA. We do it for National Treasury. We do it for everybody, I would say. But I'm just mentioning the key stakeholders to this survey, SALGA. Remember now, those are the policymakers whom they should be asking now these questions to say, okay, municipalities, we are seeing this from the State SA independent reports, then why is this the situation? So we are doing it for those policymakers and decision makers I have mentioned. It's not necessarily for State SA.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm sure they are asking these questions because on the media launch on Wednesday, we had a guy from COCTA to say, he mentioned that I'm giving 10 billion. I think I'm giving 56 billion to municipalities to fund some indigents.
Yeah.
But now I'm told that there are 10 million indigents, but your report is showing 2.9 indigents. So now you'll have to go back to the municipalities and try to establish this difference between the actual data received from CSSA and whatever data that he has got or report that he has got from those he has given them the money. So we are doing it for the key stakeholders, but everyone is allowed to use the report and interrogate where where applicable.
Okay, we are in conversation with Statistics South Africa. Of course, Malibongwe Meme there joining us as the director responsible for local government institutions, unpacking the non-financial census of municipalities in South Africa for the year ended 2019. If you do have a question for him, that line is 0861-987-000. And I think it is important to interrogate the state of our municipalities and where they are in a number of issues, particularly given that this year is, in fact, our local government election year, and it's important to understand that as we go forward, just how many or how municipalities are doing and what is the responsibility of citizens going forward in ensuring that they bolster up the work of municipalities. I wanted to ask Malibongwe, on the back of what you were saying, I mean, the disjuncture between what you might have on your report and what the COCTA official has, is it sparking some need from your side to think of strengthening your methodology in how you attack this type of census so that there isn't great disparity in terms of the information, and also you have time to triangulate? And I do see you did make a note on this report that you might actually do these reports now every second year than them coming out yearly.
Yes, yes. On the 15th of April, we are having a workshop on the non-financial census where we have invited all our stakeholders, internal and external, important and non-important stakeholders, to come on board, and we discuss the issue of, for instance, the issue of the budget, because as we have mentioned in our discussions, say, the government is struggling. Even us in CSSA, the reason why now we will be publishing this release once in every 2 years is because our vacancy rate was high, and some posts were regarded as non-critical, etc. And now the money has been cut. I mean, the budget for the organization has been cut by National Treasury. So now the vacancies which were in our area cannot all be filled, and we wouldn't be able now to publish this. But we are calling everyone, and we'll be explaining that on the 15th of April to our stakeholders, to say who can assist maybe with giving us some money so that we continue to do this annually, and we improve on the methodology, as you have indicated, in terms of like the questions, the follow-up questions, instead of asking only the vacancy rate and maybe the follow-up questions as to why are these not filled, to be part of also the report, because we just ask why has this decreased, why has this increased, then they tell us no, there was a moratorium that was placed that this year or this year we shouldn't fill the vacancies, they will be filled in the following year.
Yeah.
But we end there in terms of asking the questions. So on that workshop, the questionnaire itself will also be scrutinized.
Interrogated, yeah.
What questions are relevant, what is missing. So we hope that the turnout will be high, so that at least we can get as much as we possibly want information regarding this non-financial census, because it's an important survey. We have noted that, but unfortunately, the situation is beyond our superiors' control.
No, I understand, and money talks, that is the reality. Malibongwe, I have a question here from Abel on Twitter asking me, do you have any numbers for the corrupt Madibeng municipality? And of course, you alluded that you are actually there. I know that you say on your website you do have unit data of all the various municipalities.
Yes, you've got it right. If one wants to see how Madibeng is performing in terms of the tables, all the tables that are on the PDF release that we have put online, they are also available on the unit data that you are talking about. And if I look on table 7 for Madibeng, I wouldn't know if it's corrupt or not.
Yeah, of course. You are just led by the data.
I'm just led by the data, and I don't collect statistics on corruption.
Yeah.
Maybe if I was collecting statistics on corruption, I would comment.
We might send you to the SIU for you to be able to do that.
What is it called? We've got NPA and other legal jurisdictions that are can deal with that. But yeah, if you want to see how Matibeng is doing in terms of maybe free basic services, in terms of basic services,
yeah,
you can go to our unit data, as you have indicated, and then you would see if there is a difference. But starting by table 7, for instance, Matibeng, on all 4 services, the services that were provided to the consumer units in 2018 are exactly the same as the services that were provided. The services that are provided, water that was provided to a number of consumer units in 2019 is exactly the same to the number that was provided in 2018 across all the 4 basic services. I'm looking at it right now. So that's all I can say to say. There is no change between 2018 and 2019 for Matibeng, which means there were no new connections between 2018 and 2019 in Matibeng. Then one can make his or her own conclusions from there.
Okay, let us just go to the line quickly, Malibongwe, and give some people an opportunity to talk to you. Diteko, good morning.
Morning, Likona. How are you?
Very well. How are you doing this morning?
Great. I think, firstly, let me welcome the report by Stats SA. Although it doesn't have the details that it should have, I'm a councillor in a municipality, and I want to indicate as part of the contribution that part of our major problem is that the allocations to municipalities by national government, it's one of the challenge that we have, because the funding model is such that whatever is allocated to municipalities, the same municipalities must also make allocations to pay salaries of councillors. So you have councillors other than just what has been raised as a vacancy rate for officials. You still need to pay councillors out of that. So you would want to make sure that in the process of doing that, you don't fill other vacancies. And that's one of the major challenges. And the reason being, National Treasury would want, or national government would want, municipalities to adopt a funded budget.
Yeah.
Now, funded budget means that we must be certain that there's money there. So if we have money only to pay for 5 people and not 10, and yet we need 10, we will go for 5. And that impacts negative on service delivery indeed. But in addition, lastly, that's my last point now, would be that most of our municipalities are unable to collect enough because of the economic conditions that our people are suffering. So we're not receiving the revenue that we should be receiving in order to ensure that we are able to ensure that we have the capacity to provide that service.
Diteko, let me just ask you a question before I let you go, because you are a councillor. When you interact with SALGA and COCTA, what suggestions are you making? Are you saying that councils probably should have their own dedicated budgets which would talk to the issue of remuneration of councillors and the support staff to political office bearers?
Yes, indeed. We have actually raised that. We have raised an issue, and I know that SALGA has a proposal that it has put together relating to the funding model for municipalities. And I know that they've been engaging on that aspect.
Okay.
On the question of payment of salaries or remuneration of councillors, we've raised the same issue, that in the same way as your national and provincial
legislatures and parliaments.
Yes. Mm. We must be able to be accommodated so that the dedicated funding for the division of revenue, it goes directly to service delivery.
Okay,
and Diteko, that's what we need to do.
Thank you very much, Diteko, there joining us in West Rand. Ben, good morning.
Good morning, Lukon. How are you doing?
Very good. How are you?
Very well. And your guest there, Malibongwe.
Lukon,
I just... Good morning, Malibongwe. I just want to find out from Malibongwe that I heard he mentioned, or he just said that politicians will tell people to build some shack or something into some areas. And now the question is, if monies were allocated to municipalities according to budget, And those people expect services from the municipalities, and you find out the municipalities are providing the service to those people. who built the shacks on that area. And where is the municipality get the money from?
Yeah.
Because they are working from the budget.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And the other question is, why do we still have acting managers in municipalities?
Okay. Okay.
All right.
Okay. I hear you, Ben, and I'll put some of those questions to my guest. Sililo, good morning.
Morning, Lukona. How are you?
Very well. How are you?
I'm good. Lukona, let's be honest.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, finding somebody to come and tell us that the state doesn't have money, the state doesn't have this and that. Let's be realistic. I originally come from Madibeng municipality.
Yeah.
I was there over the weekend to actually spend time with my family. Sadly, when I go there, there's no water in Madibeng. If you drive through the town of Madibeng as a whole, you can see there is nothing happening. So interestingly enough, we are busy debating having to pay councillors. What are we paying them for?
Mm.
At the end of the day, we cannot have a situation where all of us have got KPIs. You can't have a situation where people are being paid for doing nothing. Madibeng as a whole, it's a mess. And then you find a person saying to us, no, if you want to see if Madibeng is working, go to the data says nothing. Go to the ground and see everything that happens.
Yeah.
Then come and talk to us about facts.
Yeah. Okay, I hear you, Silo. I mean, Malibongwe, just a bite on some of those questions, and I think the last point being made by Silo is really to say it's one thing getting the data, it's another getting to a stage where we start looking at social impact of some of these initiatives.
Okay, yeah, let me start with Silo. Like I indicated, maybe he missed me, to say, like, the data. Remember, the data informs what is also happening there on the ground. So like I indicated, on Table 7, Madibeng, there was no change between 2018 for water, for electricity, for sewage and sanitation, for solid waste, which means it was providing the service to the same people it was providing in the previous year. So like, yeah, we're sort of talking the same language, but like maybe differently. When we want to measure now in the quality and stuff like that, I think we would recommend one to consider the census survey, because now the census, like I indicated, this one doesn't go to the household.
Yes.
It goes to the municipality. But now if you want to gauge the issues of quality in terms of the services that you get, then I think it's better that you consult our household survey, which is your community survey and your census, because the general household survey at the moment, because of the same reasons that are associated with money, doesn't go to a level beyond the metropolitan municipalities. So the GHS, it covers the provinces and the metropolitan municipalities, so it doesn't go at a municipal level.
Mm.
But fortunately, census is coming, and then, yeah, people can interrogate that data and see what is happening.
Okay.
We are not here to say, to tell who's doing good or bad. We are just telling the state of a municipal service delivery.
As per the reporting of the municipalities.
One can tell if one is doing good or bad. It's his or her own analysis. But we report what we have received from the municipalities.
Malibongwe, I mean,
and then, on the issue of where do they get the budget, those who are providing the services, that's one of the challenges, I would say, that are faced by municipalities. Because if now people have just built some shacks in an open land, and now municipality must provide services to that to those particular households there, then they have to source funds somewhere from the available budget.
Mm.
And that's why you find that maybe in some of the municipalities, I'm not saying the reason why municipalities are not paying people, because recently we heard that people were not getting their salaries. It's because sometimes money is diverted, diverted to an area where it was not allocated to. But I'm not endorsing or I'm not saying
encouraging.
I'm 100% sure that if salaries are not paid, it's because money is providing services. But I'm saying municipality has to find money somewhere in order to cater for those people. Because if they stay there under such unhealthy condition, they may get sick and it comes back to the municipality.
Of course, I mean, I'm getting some tweets as well. People really quite unhappy with the state of Madibeng, but that is a story for another day. Just quickly, Malibongwe, I saw you also spoke about part-time counselors. I didn't know that we still had those. I thought people had to choose between their jobs and being counselors at a full-time basis. What is still behind some provinces? Well, all provinces still having part-time counselors, and I suppose this would differ from municipality to municipality.
Yeah, okay. What table is that?
That would be table 1.3.
Okay. Let me go there quickly. Table 1.3.
So you sort of look at the number of councillors by province.
Some of the part-time councillors.
Mm.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, no. Again, here, on the issue of part-time councillors, male and female, you can see, like, yeah, all the provinces, in fact, have shown that there are people who are still part-time councillors. But, yeah, I think it has not yet been fully implemented. The plea or the request or the, the instruction from government to say people must choose between their job is not yet fully implemented. Because judging by the information that we have received,
yeah,
most municipalities still have part-time councillors. But when it comes to mayors and executive mayors, I think we only have full time.
No, absolutely. I did see that. But so yeah, you are then saying now, given the type of questions you asked, you may not be able to even give a disaggregation of these 3,162 there are, well, 3,162 female, 4,574 male part-time counselors, as to where else are they occupying space, or does part-time simply, I mean, refer to those that are in the proportional representation list? Because, I mean, these are quite high numbers if people have really not heeded the call to say that they must be in council on a full-time basis, or that is not meant to be the case.
Yeah. Yes, yeah, I would say, yeah, even though they are part-time, maybe, like, it comes back to the issue of...
Malibongwe, I'm losing your line there. I do not know.
Hello.
Okay, yes, I've got you back.
You got me back, me. Yeah, no, I'm saying it still rotates, even though we don't ask a further question beyond being given this information.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, I think... these questions that you are asking, even the listeners are asking today, will also guide us in the workshop that we are coming to next week, and maybe we will see what we can do. But yeah, I think it also revolves around the issue of money, because if you will have full-time councillors, it means you must pay them full-time.
More money.
So maybe municipalities are categorizing those key priorities to say, let's make maybe this area a full-time. This one is not that busy, or this one is not that urgent.
Okay.
We can make it part-time so that we don't pay a similar salaries across.
Malibongwe, thank you very much. Hopefully we will catch up after that workshop just to see what the way forward is with this non-financial census.
Thank you very much, Lukona.
Thank you very much. That is Director responsible for local government institutions at Statistics South Africa.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.